Welcome to Dragon Talk, the official Dungeons & Dragons podcast. I'm Greg Tito. I'm here with the amazing Shelley Mazenoble.
Yes, you have the amazing Shelley today. As opposed to the so-so Shelley.
Yeah, you know, the normal Shelley. You are a little bit amazing today.
I am, because I'm really excited about our guest.
Yes, yes, our guest is Mr. Ben Cameron, and he'll be talking about playing Dungeons & Dragons for birthday parties and also adult parties.
Whoa.
With clothes on. We'll talk all about that. But the coolest part is just being able to live the dream of getting paid to Dungeon Master.
Yes. And he also does more than birthday parties.
What?
He also uses D&D to teach life skills.
What?
Mm-hmm. And works with children with Asperger's. And teaches D&D to help them with gain social skills.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I think he's probably going to be a little bit more articulate than I just was.
No, I think the pauses were you just coming up with the most amazing things to talk about.
Very dramatic.
Nice.
Yeah.
So cool. I can't wait to talk to him. But first, we have some fun things we like to talk about. Storm King's Thunder is out in stores. Go buy it. It is amazing. It is a very fun adventure. You probably got a preview of it at PAX with Chris Perkins running the Acquisitions Incorporated gang through an adventure that was very giant themed. You might even say that there was some giant smashing going on.
Maybe.
Yes, it was a smashing good time.
A smashing success.
Yeah, and I hope, I can't wait to hear from the people who watched it in more than 300 movie theaters across the US of A, thanks to Fathom Events, making it broadcast live.
Crazy.
Yeah, insane. So those of you who only get to watch it live during PAX every year, now you get to be with a whole group of friends, and I can't wait to hear how it went. And hopefully we'll do much more of those.
Yeah, definitely.
What else is going on? Betrayal at House on the Hill, the
expansion's coming soon.
Yeah, it's in October, right?
October 14th.
October 14th.
Just in time for Halloween.
Just in time.
Start planning those Halloween parties now.
Yeah. We'll have to talk to Ben about making sure he includes that board game in his Halloween-themed parties.
Maybe that's like another business opportunity.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a business opportunity for you and Avalon Hill.
Well, I mean, like throwing Avalon Hill, I mean, Betrayal birthday parties.
Yeah.
What better way to say thank you for coming to my party?
And there are two kids in the game.
That's true.
It works perfectly.
Here, you're going to play the small child. Oops.
Yeah. Yep.
Sorry about smashing you in the face with a chainsaw.
And isn't there like a flesh-eating child or something?
The flesh child.
The flesh child,
Christopher Bedell. That was the first. Were you in that playtest with me?
I don't think I was.
Oh, it was the first one I playtested. I never got over it.
Yeah, it's creepy.
The flesh child.
It's
as disgusting and creepy as it sounds.
Yeah. It sounds amazing. We also have Bolo's Guide to Monsters is coming in October. It is a take on a few very iconic monsters. We'll delve deep into like Mind Flayers.
That's like the coolest cover too, ever.
Oh, God, I know. Yeah. Hydro 74, Joshua Smith made that cover for us, and it is
so
sweet.
Cool.
So, yeah, for those of you who don't know, it's a limited edition cover that's only going to be in game stores. We're not printing any more of them. It'll be limited run.
So you got to get it.
Yeah.
As soon as you see it in your game store.
And it's the exact same insides as the other cover.
It's just the cover that's
different. So it's just the cover that's different. So it's not like a whole new edition. You don't have to feel like you have to get both. But if you wanted to collect them, I'm not going to stop you. Stop them?
No.
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 You won't.
You can just display it.
You can display it
and
proudly.
And use the other one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I don't know if anybody else knows this yet, but he actually made four like alt covers of that special cover with four
inspired.
Of the monsters. Yeah, right. So it's all there's a Mind Flayer, there's a Beholder, and a Yuan Ti.
Where do we get those?
I don't know.
You just have the
images
just
exist.
Here?
They may be in T-shirt form. They may be on a notebook. I don't know. We'll come up with
Trapper Keepers.
Yes. Yeah, we're bringing back Trapper Keepers, number one. Number two, and then we're going to put that in them all over the place.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, we're working with the Duffer Brothers on that.
Aw.
No, I'm just kidding.
Aw, don't
But we should. This. We should.
Duffer Brothers, if you're out there.
Give us a call. 917-403.
I love that show so much.
The Stranger Things?
Yeah.
I'm going to call everything is the. I don't know if you noticed. The Stranger Things is badass. Yeah.
So
and there's a season two coming, which...
Did it get greenlit?
I believe it is, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Good.
Ben Cameron is nodding. That means it has.
Because I was last I heard.
I know, it wasn't. And then I figured,
even the people at Netflix were like, it would be really dumb not to.
Yeah, which like is not really a confirmation, right. But we're pretty sure.
Right.
Yeah, and I can't wait for more D&D integration with all that show.
It's gonna be fun. I want to talk to those kids.
Me too.
I wonder if they are like, this D&D thing.
We should.
Very cool.
We should get our guest to run a birthday party for them.
Oh, that would be awesome.
This is like a win-win.
World's colliding.
Nice. All right. So before we get to our interview with Ben, we're going to just jump in with Chris Perkins and Matt Cernit to talk some more lore you should know. And this is where we insert the lore directly into your brain. Welcome to Lore You Should Know. I'm joined by two amazing gentlemen. I have Mr. Matt Cernit.
Howdy.
And Chris Perkins.
Greetings.
And we're here to talk about the Feywild.
Ooh.
It is wild and fey at the same time.
Yes.
What can you tell us about what this plane is all about?
It started off in early editions as the Plane of Faery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And with fourth edition, got a new name,
mm-hmm.
or an additional name, actually, the Feywild. And basically, it is a parallel plane to what we call the material plane, which is the plane on which our worlds reside. It is sort of one of two mirror planes, the other being the Shadowfell. The Feywild is more like a happy reflection in some respects, and whereas the Shadowfell is a very dark reflection, this one's a lighter one. But to say that the Feywild is a light place would be selling it short, because if you go back into fairy myths, they run the gamut from quite benign to creepily malevolent.
I would say that's definitely true. And I think that when we think about the Feywild in sort of the modern 5th edition context, it's a place of just incredible variety and beauty and eeriness and all kinds of things like that. But it's also a realm of emotion where to some degree those emotions are made manifest with actual creatures. So there will be beings that represent those emotions and it's a much more sort of morally a mysterious realm. The sort of seely and unseely, the various courts of the summer court and the gloaming court are. Yeah. They aren't exactly good and evil. The queen Titiana, I believe it is. She might be nice and summery to you one moment and just completely awful the next. The Queen of Air and Darkness, which is a character that has deep roots in the lore of the game, is the leader of the Gloaming Court and the Unseelie. And she's sort of equally...
Ambiguous.
Ambiguous, yeah. I mean, she's certainly more on the dark side than the light. But again, it might be someone with whom you can actually deal and have a conversation and actually gain benefits from, or even do good things. Whereas the Shadowfell, I think, is a much darker realm, much less in the way of sort of emotion, much sort of single tone kind of place.
So are these separate?
It's more like deadened emotions.
Yes.
As opposed to the sort of vibrant, over-the-top emotions of the Feywild.
All right, that's a good way to really think about it. That makes sense. Are these courts that you mentioned, are they elves? Are they demigods? What are these leaders?
So the there's various figures that are sort of important, powerful figures in these courts that aren't really gods as such, but they are powerful beings in their own right. They have very broad and mysterious powers within their own realm.
Sort of like a Dark Lord in a Ravenloft domain can exercise power over its domain. An archfey in a Feywild domain can basically do the same. shape the landscape to reflect their moods and idiosyncrasies.
And they're
how did they get this power, though? That's where I guess
the, that is. That's the, I mean they're really ancient figures in the sort of world of the myth of D&D, and so like the Queen of Air and Darkness is a very strange figure. Queen Tiana and the Queen of Air and Darkness are sisters. But the Queen of Air and Darkness is a black diamond floating above a throne in this sort of starscape chamber room. Whoa!
I can relate.
Yeah, I know. I've been a black diamond before. It's it's pretty awesome.
So, and then, the Queen Titiana is the summer queen, and she is a more sort of relatable elf-like figure. But are they elves? No, they're something else.
Okay.
There's a character that hasn't been written about very much, but it's Hearsome, and I think that's his name.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of the Lord of the Satyrs. But is he a satyr exactly? No, not exactly. They're all sort of unique beings of their own.
Yeah, mm-hmm. All the Archfey are unique and similar to demon lords. They've got their own identity. Their power comes to some extent from the plane in which they live. They've just figured out ancient ways to harness it. If you live long enough, and they live a long time,
right,
you start to figure things out.
Yeah. So they were always of the Feywild then?
There is no indication they've been anywhere else.
Yeah. And the two courts aren't exactly enemies. They're frenemies. They're sometimes foes, but most of the time it's a lot of sort of politics with one another and playing little games, and tit for tat type stuff. Whereas the pawns of those games are that could be life or death for them, certainly. But for the Archfey, it is this long term.
Yeah, just imagine two sprawling secret kingdoms in the wilderness, living side by side, and their rulers are a touch mad. And they're just sort of forced to cohabit this realm and share their power.
It does seem like a very ancient, from our culture, like it draws on a lot of things like Alice in Wonderland and, the Seelie and Unseelie courts is legends that have, been in human culture for a long time. So it's interesting to see like, okay, in D&D culture, how is it different and how is it, like a thing? And the question that I always want to be like is, well, they're from, obviously the elves have a connection with the Feywild. How does that relate to this?
Well, so it gets a bit muddy and murky in the fourth edition era, but because the sort of adoption of the term Eladrin to change how we viewed the moon and the sun elves, but if you go way back into the lore, there's the idea that elves came from the plane of Faerie, which in and of itself is interesting and strange because their deities, their pantheon, the Corallon and all those other elf deities and so on, exist in mainly in one plane, and it is very fairy-like in its description. And so was that intended to be the place where they came from, or was it intended to be this alternate plane of fairy? And it's kind of hard to tell from if you look back into the lore, but I would say a perfectly legitimate sort of interpretation would be the gods of the elves made the elves in the world of the plane of fairy, and that then those elves emigrated from fairy into the Forgotten Realms.
I see.
And became the kingdoms that would basically become the sun elves and the moon elves and the wild elves and so on and so forth.
Interesting. All right. I like that interpretation. I love also the interpretation of your role as the person who looks at all these ancient scriptures and figures out the story between them all.
Yep. That's my 9 to 5.
Matt Cernett, prophet of D&D. Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Well, there's definitely a lot to mine there, but I'm thinking about more segments where we talk more about the Shadowfell and other planes of existence. So interesting. I think we only scratched the surface, but I think there's more.
Oh, yes.
To talk about.
Agreed.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Till that time. So, radio, Robot Shelley, did you get the lore insertion?
Yes. Wow. I am so smart.
You feel smarter now.
I need to go to a dinner party.
A dinner party.
And talk about.
In which we will play the Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, so I can say, oh, I love the salad. Did you know? And then I can just drop some of the lore I know.
Yeah. I think that's a very apt way to use that segment.
How else do you use it?
I don't know. I drop it into dinner parties all the time. And people are like, I don't care about what the Lord's Enclave is doing.
Yeah. And by the way, who are you? Who's friend are you?
I'm just a guy who showed up to the dinner party. I don't know. It happens a lot. But I'm excited to talk to our guest.
Let's
who is
do
here
it.
In the office with us in Renton, Washington.
Also very exciting.
Yeah. It's very rare we get someone who is as distinguished as this in person. Welcome. Ben Cameron.
Ben!
Hello.
Was that weird, us talking about you for so long with you being here?
Don't look at him.
No.
Don't talk about him.
Don't look directly at him.
How could you not talk about me?
Did you see his shirt? Oh, my God.
I know.
And I will say, for the record, that we'll call my head nodding enthusiastic hope.
Did you watch it, Ben? Why are you watching
No, it's hard for me to watch certain programs because I have 5 kids at home.
Right.
So the time windows in which I get to watch anything that I don't want them to see is basically from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. And I spend most of that time writing and prepping.
Oh.
But in the summer, they go to bed late and it creates challenges. Yeah.
Can't wait for school to start, right?
What's the age range of the 5 children at home?
My kids are, they're 12, 10, 8, 6, and 3.
Wow.
You have to check the math every time, right? See, the problem is every year it changes.
Well, and one of them is off the pattern. They're 2 years apart until the last one, and then I always feel like, am I forgetting somebody? No.
No, yeah, it's that feeling that like I'm not following the pattern.
Yeah.
It's the same thing that makes me double check all the car seats before I drive. Are they all actually sitting down? Yes.
All right. Are they all buckled in? All right. Good.
Do you actually transport them all at the same time?
For carpool in the morning at school, yeah,
wow.
I do 3 schools. All over town, and then
I don't know how anyone does this. I don't know how
I have to.
You guys just have the one, and it's like the hardest thing
in
the world.
I can't. Like, well, sometimes we just like leave the house without him. Like, did you? Nope.
Shoot, he's just gonna watch Thomas all day.
Accidentally brought the puppy instead.
Nice. Ben, you work is Bespoke Legends your company?
Yes.
And is it just you?
Yeah. Just
do you have
me.
Any employees?
Not as of yet. No.
Would you like one?
Are you applying?
Yeah, if I can find somebody who complements my skill set and has the passion and is ready to do the work, then yeah.
Nice. So tell our listeners what exactly Bespoke Legends is all about.
Well, Bespoke Legends is the umbrella under which all of my professional dungeon mastering work occurs. Hopefully, at the end of this year, Legends Bespoke will become my imprint, and all that material will become available to the public through the Dungeon Masters Guild and anyone else who will sell it.
Yay.
Yeah, great.
But with Bespoke Legends, essentially, you're hiring me to, for the birthday party context, do a 3-hour birthday party with a complete original plot based on you or your child's favorite film, TV, movies, video games that are, even if they're not on genre, I can still get the sort of feel of them, get a feel for what you love in a story. And then I just put together a 3-act structure, get all the minis and everything organized, and jump into it. It's, although actually I bring costumes, voices, puppets, terrain, all sorts of stuff in order to just maximize the excitement of it. And that actually is a spinoff of Dungeon School, which is my after-school programs, which is where it gets into the teaching end. But it's actually a stealth writing class. I don't tell the kids it's a writing class.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I never tell them that. Not once. I tell the parents that because the kids don't want to hear it.
So all the listeners, the kids at home, were listening to Dragon Talk.
Yeah,
it's not a writing class.
Jig is up.
It's not a writing class.
Yeah, well, you know, you get into it as much as you put out. You get out of it as much as you put into it, which is how any good class should be. My end of it is the performance. That's what I do. What I do is more performance art than dungeon mastering in some ways, because I'm there to get the excitement up, and then the kids, basically, I dangle power in front of them. Mm-hmm. They in my classes, you don't get experience points or treasure. You level up rhythmically in accordance with the arc of the module that I've created for that class for that year, And then and I upgrade your equipment progressively because you're a part of the Apotheosis Institute, which the kids call Dungeon School because they view it more as a punishment and a prison, as a lot of people view boarding academies, as opposed to an institute meant to create godlike warriors to help defend us from the Neverborn who are progressively collapsing reality in on us.
So this is the story of the world that you've created for that after-school program?
Yeah, it started out, actually, when we moved. Everywhere I've ever moved in my life, D&D has been sort of the way that I met people and got to know people and became a part of the local community. Yeah, I love hearing that story because it makes my journey seem more natural. And
what's the story?
The story of people who you know, they find their local communities or they move someplace and they find their community through Dungeons and Dragons.
You worried that we're talking about you? I thought
there was some like specific story.
I was just looking at her because I've heard her voice on the podcast many times discussing the issue.
Shelly hasn't heard her own voice.
I can't listen to my voice. Sorry.
So tell us a little bit about, so there's two things here. There's the birthday parties and then there's the dungeon school. But
yeah.
So the birthday party, say like run us through an example of like an adult who contacts you, says my 5-year-old wants to do a birthday party.
What's the typical age that this is going to?
The youngest kids I've ever worked with were 8.
Okay.
That's very challenging. Attention spans are very tight.
Yeah.
I have to be very ready to let them go and come, and it's very fluid. It's hard to maintain their focus in the same way because they do not care as much about the little intricate puzzles or details of complicated NPCs. They don't get caught on those same narrative points.
Right.
Most of the kids I've had very successful birthday parties with were between 10 and 13.
Okay.
Mostly with kids who know the game to some degree. I think on worst case scenario, I'll have 50% of the kids don't know it at all.
Mm-hmm.
But usually I can explain it very rapidly. The concepts are very basic. There's literary or mythical and legendary examples of every class and every race. So I can explain any of those concepts with simple ideas that I can just throw at them. And they usually know what they want. If I tell them, what's your favorite character in a fantasy book, movie, game, anything, they'll come back. Best example I had last semester was a kid who joined right at the end of the year and didn't know anything, and he wanted to play Link from The Legend of Zelda.
Right.
So I handed him a fighter champion and let him do some writing to get some specialized items to match more of Link's gear. And by the end of the term, he was basically playing exactly what he wanted.
Yeah. Give him a boomerang and a hook shot and all the things that he needs.
And then those are my tricks there. There is that they want those things. That's where they have to do the work. They have to write a short story, beginning, middle, end, showing how they got it, from whom they got it, and how they used it at least once to resolve a problem. And of course, the requirements vary dramatically there by child. The most prolific kid I had last year wrote almost 40 pages. And then on the other end, I have a kid who struggles with dysgraphia and dyslexia, and I considered him also one of my most successful writers because he produced about 10 pages.
That's amazing.
Yeah, because for him,
the parents have to be absolutely thrilled.
Yeah, and it's they have been. In fact, the nicest thing I've had said was one of them told me that their therapist said that if he had had my class earlier, he wouldn't have needed the therapy.
Wow.
Which I'm hoping that somewhere out
there
are some kids.
We need to get that doctor to blurb you.
to write it down someplace.
You got to get some of that sweet therapist money.
Yeah. Yeah. Start taking insurance.
Very cool. All right. So, it makes much more sense to have kids who are a little bit older so that they're able to grasp a little bit. But so if it's someone comes to you and they said, here's my, I was fascinated by the fact that you said you could get stuff that's not in genre and kind of make it feel like it's got the same feel. So what is the thing that was most outside of the fantasy wheelhouse that you were able to corral in and make it feel like it was part of the same world?
I feel like most of the tropes and symbolic sets that make something fantasy are not necessarily tied to the structure of the genre.
Mm-hmm.
There's a setting I have, or there's a piece of the setting that I call the First Mother. It's this 40-mile-long dragon that's sailing out through the outer red rim of the solar system.
Yeah.
And I've had 2 campaigns and about up to be a third set there. My first birthday party was set there, and it was a kid who's really into dragons. He really liked Fablehaven. So there's this component where the inside of the dragon's body, all the different organs contained different draconic entities and different species of dragons. And it's actually the place where all the dragons in the surviving universe go to reproduce. Mm. So there's this pilgrimage component. They weren't able to make their pilgrimage because the first mother was sick and was vomiting green fire, and they had to go in the other way, which the kids loved.
They love. They love potty humor.
If there's golems, a dragon who's vomiting, I'm not going in the other way.
Yeah, and they flew in the other way in a giant steampunk mechanical fish that was swimming through the aether. So a lot of these are... they're borderline. I'm taking fantasy structures, but I'm playing with a little steampunk, and I'm playing with a little straight-up science fiction, frankly. Right.
And a little poop humor.
Right, right. Yeah, but right. And all of that stuff fits in the wheelhouse, and I think that's the glory of something, of role-playing games in general and of Dungeons & Dragons, and I think 5th edition in particular hones in a nice, clean set of sharp, concise rules that can be applied generally but are not so technical and consuming that you have to spend any time really thinking about any given situation.
Right. Interesting. So, yeah. I mean, the thing that popped in my brain too, and I wonder if you're going to get this more now, is like kids being like, oh, I want to be a Ghostbuster and in Dungeons and Dragons and like making that kind of, you know, fun thing, or like, I want to be a ninja. How does that work? And
well, what I'd say to that is, from second advanced onward, as soon as I was old enough to figure out how to min-max and how to start trying to break the system in any way I can. Third was one of my favorite places for that because the extended feat system you basically do anything.
Yeah, especially after all the splat books were out there, and then there was all the other D20 stuff. Like, you could do pretty much anything.
Right, exactly. It was with the open gaming license. It was crazy.
Yeah.
So I've always tried to understand how to break the mechanic. And with a birthday, because I'm only running for 3 hours and it just has to be what they want to the maximum degree, one, I can usually break the mechanics and skew them in the direction of whatever they want. And two, for the birthday kid especially, they just get what they want.
Yeah.
So if a birthday kid wanted to play a Ghostbuster, it would depend on the other features of what they wanted. I imagine I would... it would depend on the kid. If they and their guests were comfortable with horror, I would totally do a haunted house scenario, something nice and dark and enclosed and tight, and keep the lights low. Maybe light some candles, like get a real good vibe going. And then, at least that kid and all the rest of them, if that's how they wanted to play it, would have essentially. It would just be a wand of spirit control.
Something like that.
I mean, it's just a magic item that just does what they want it to do. And then the rest of it's all just normal narrative structure stuff.
Because essentially Ghostbusters is a fantasy thing.
Exactly.
The magic is, they've got a nuclear reactor on their back.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you just do the same thing. Yeah, but I love those mixing up of tropes. I mean, I remember when I heard about I never actually played this adventure, but I wanted to, but it was a Die Hard. It's kind of a similar thing where you were like caught in a one location, and you didn't know how to get out, and there was all the bad guys were just trying to do like some caper in there, and you get stuck. Scenarios like that where kids are like going to latch on to things that they remember from, Percy Jackson or something that's Harry Potter-ish, and be like, oh yeah, we could totally get that into the D&D structure.
Oh yeah, it absorbs almost anything.
So are the parents that are calling you, are they D&D players usually, or have they just heard about this guy who comes and runs parties? And
it varies pretty wildly whether they're players or not. Largely, the classes run into the birthday parties as the business has grown, because that's where I started, was with the classes, basically because I had run one session for some friends, and a friend had said, what you do is essentially performance art. You should do this for the kids in this after-school thing. And one of the insane items on my impossible bucket list was get paid to run a role-playing game. And I thought, okay, that would make two items in 1 year, which would only leave technically standing on another planet. But I'll take, at this point, based on the technology, being in orbit in microgravity. That would be acceptable, and that would be my three bigs.
on your bucket list that you
get. Yeah, the ones I didn't think I was going to get to do. The third one having been give a eulogy at a stranger's funeral, which was miraculous that one happened too.
That happened.
I'm counting it. I gave a eulogy at a friend of mine's mother's funeral, and I had had two sentences of conversation with her ever from across a dinner table 15 years earlier.
Was she talking about
Dungeons and Dragons?
No, she was having an extremely loud argument with another guest at the table for pure contrarian's sake. And like, I tried to engage, got a response, immediately realized it was not worth being a part of that conversation.
Was this what the eulogy was about?
No.
I noticed it was not a good eulogy. You were like, I just need to give a eulogy. It doesn't mean
No, no. Actually, her husband was happy with it. That, I think, so that's the accomplishment. And that has to do with improv, basically, which also has to do with how I get the performance art and the DMing done and all of that, is that I had a period where when I was really little, when I got back into it, like post-Satanic Panic and all of that process that everybody goes through when they're younger, when I first moved to Colorado when I was 12, I didn't have any friends for a long time. It was just me in the library and fantasy novels, and then Faerun books and Dragonlance books and Dark Sun and Planescape, and which to this day Tony DiTerlizzi is one of my personal heroes, and Monty Cook and
Giants.
So I got really into world building because that's all I really had for a long time, and I I made myself friends,
and then they were all on sheets. They were NPC characters,
right? And then
and I would talk to each other.
When I finally found a group to play with, I had all this material, and so I played a little bit, and then there was this point where I realized I can't ever stick to any character because I want to play all the characters, and so the only thing I can do is DM. And so for how old am I? Close to 20 years, I've only run games. I played some here and there, but
just to know what it's like to be on the other side.
Even when I was playing, at some point I would talk my way into running for a while. Because in college I did have one game that ran for about 2 years that I only got to run a few months of.
Nice,
still good.
Still very good. All right, cool. So so when you transitioned into doing these after-school specials, they're not after-school specials.
The more you know.
How did you come up with the curriculum for that?
So, well, I'll confess, for the first four sessions, I wasn't 100% sure what I was doing.
You learned.
Right.
Well, what I started off with is I said, okay, well, let's create a classroom experience, and I took individual components of dungeoneering and of battle, and I reduced them to sort of a classroom scene. And then when we did the color tile on the floor sets off X type of trap, and then we did a maze, and then we did some isolation puzzles where there's a pillar in the middle of an oubliette, and they have, as a team, have to figure out how to get to the pillar. And then I'd break them into groups, and the rogues would have to solve a task, and then the wizards, and then the fighters. No one ever plays a cleric for some reason.
Kids. Good, right? Nobody wants to take time to heal their friends.
Right? Oh, right. Well, especially because the sessions are tight. It's only an hour long, the after school class. And in my biggest class ever, I had 13 players.
Oh.
So to make sure everybody gets an action.
You need them to die off if there's 13. Well, no cleric.
No. I've only had two in-game deaths. Both were totally dramatic and awesome. And that's the only reason I allowed it to happen. Because I just give everybody max hit points so that they can get wailed on, and I try not to let them miss because there's not a lot of time.
Yeah.
Because the real point is that they have to be deeply enthused about their characters and about the story so that when I ask them to write, they will.
Right.
Anyway, I took all of those opening salvos, the tile puzzle and the oubliette puzzle and the maze and everything, and then I put them in a dungeon that contained all of those things and had them run through it and hunt down a minotaur in the heart of it. And that was when I realized that I did not understand entirely what 12 third level characters in a party could do to a monster.
Oh, yeah.
But I learned fast. Because I could not believe that they just grounded into hamburgers so quick. It's just, it has to be a fast-paced game. I'm proud of the best session I ever had. It's 13 players, 12 monsters, and we had 3 rounds of action in an hour.
Wow.
So I can keep them going. Because I'll also just tell them, when it comes your turn, be ready,
right,
or it's the next person's turn. And that keeps them very focused. You skip someone once, and it keeps everyone focused all day.
I've heard about people doing that for the adult games as well.
Yeah. I did that in the last session of my adult game.
Yeah.
I came back, but...
Do you allow phones at the table?
the first time that happened, because for me, I'm an artist on stage, and I'm like trying to be up there, and I'm doing these voices and these faces and costumes and characters, and I'm trying to bring their attention to the table. And at my adult game, people started bringing out the phones, and I had to just like take a deep breath and hold it in and wait and see what was happening. And then I figured out they were actually live tweeting what was happening and being really excited. So I created a Facebook group for that game so they can all just pile onto it. And that actually has become a repository for stories that I've written for them.
Oh, that's
and
good.
We tell jokes. And like Dorks of Yore did a thing the other day about halfling strength. And I posted that because our main tank is a halfling fighter.
Nice.
She is a tank. I gave her some items I shouldn't have, but I can always take them away.
And the
player hears me now and knows.
Yeah. No, you can't take things away from kids though. Only the adult games.
No. In the kids games, that was sort of the first line. Is what I do at the very beginning is that we pull out the trinket table from the player's handbook, Everybody rolls three times. You pick your favorite one. We write it down on a piece of paper, and you have to write. It depends on your grade level. A paragraph, a page, or as much as three pages when we get up to the seventh and eighth graders about that trinket. And it will become magical either in any way you want it to, or we can brainstorm about what it should do based on the description. And my favorite thing about that is they never come up with what I thought it should do.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
They're like, here's a feather, and like, this is a feather of fire.
Right?
And it blows you up.
Yeah, and it's a quill that the tip of it has a permanent reservoir of ink from the desk of Ignis, the lord of the third plane of fire.
Well, that's way better than what I just came up with. Yeah. You have some improv background, I see.
Is your background?
I have a bachelor's in anthropology, and I ran retail stores for a long time for Barnes & Noble and Borders.
Did you take improv classes?
No. I've done this. I DM'd.
That's an improv class.
Well, the improv part came from when I ran a year and a half a campaign. I was allowed one side of a 3x5 note card per session. That's it and a soundtrack. And I had to go in with just that and run for 4 to 6 hours per session every week and just keep it going without no planning, no thought, I developed this way of GMing that I use now that I don't write plots. I create a web of places and the geography and the stream of time moving forward in the world that the players can move between, and any place that they move has implications for the places that they don't move. So, and in the bigger games, when I'm running a campaign, I can do this stuff where there's three or four villains, and if they go over here to fight villain one, then villain four gets to stay over here and just keep doing his thing as long as they don't go over there. So there's always, but that also means that as the campaign moves forward, I guess in sort of a BioWare structural sense, the difficulty of each individual subplot or encounter is increased proportional to how much you've leveled on your way there, but not necessarily. I like to put things in that people cannot beat.
Yeah,
and
so people have like a, there's danger.
Yeah.
You need to be able to run away and or come up with a better plan to thwart that thing. But I also like that what you're talking about, because that makes the world seem like it actually is being changed and affected. I've played in campaigns where you overthrow the king and then the king's son would just take over and it'd be like the exact same country, and you're like, oh man, you're just steamrolling us. You got to make it feel like there's alive.
That's one of the things I think that catches some of the kids. One of my favorite tryouts I have is in my middle school game. I have a player who's been with me for 3 years. His little brother just this year started in my elementary school game, and his dad is in my adult campaign.
Oh, God.
So their characters are all interrelated.
Neat.
And it there's sort of a sidetrack too. And the politics of the world, I won't go into it that much, unless you want to hear it, of course. Then I'll ramble for hours, I'm sure.
After when we're off mic, we'll talk.
Galadin was the name of this character, and in the adult campaign, as a gag, I named the father of a different character, a different player than the father of the player in the young game, Galadin Sutcliffe the Eighth, and his son is the Ninth, and he's playing the third son who doesn't keep to continue the name, but there's kind of a path of heredity there, And then there's this magical heredity from the character that's now passed to the father of the character. So this whole complex series.
I need a diagram. I need a family tree.
Draw a picture of that. Yeah. But that's the level it's reached, is that because every single one of the games, and actually this is the number one dream I've been able to achieve by doing so many campaigns at once, is I have now what I call my meta game, which is that all four of the campaigns that are ongoing, plus the birthday parties, take place in the same world at different points in time and space. All of them affect all the others. So there was a point where a keep had been locked down and the party couldn't get into it in the campaign. It was because in the kids' game they had screwed up and they had not done what I intended and instead created a massive magical explosion that had to be contained. So the entire Magisterium had had to come and contain it with all the available wizards and sorcerers they could find. And basically it all comes down to who gets to play a scene first. Right. So whichever group arrives at a given location first gets to make the primary impact, and then stuff happens, like they get written into the world where that name Gallandon now has meaning all over the world, and all different cultures claim him as a hero figure, and he has a different last name depending on which culture you're talking to. So the local thing where his last name is Sutcliffe is purely propaganda, but it has supported a fake noble house for over 500 years.
But how do you keep track of all of this?
Like I said, world building is the essence of what I do. I'll say this, the world where I play mostly is on a flat earth. That occurs under the Arc of Heaven. There's a dome over it, like those old medieval illustrations where you see somebody peeking through a crack and all the stars are just holes pinpricked in a dome of the sky. And then outside that are vast brass disks that extend out to about 70 astronomical units, which contain the actual planets and keep them moving in their orbits, because outside of that is the world's wall, which is called that because it's made of all the worlds that didn't make it through the end of the cosmos. Because everything that remains is just, that's why the adult setting I call Revenant Age, because it's a Revenant universe. It's been forced back into life to prevent its end by being so powerful that you can't stop them from doing that. And then the goal is to try to reboot it. But I haven't quite gotten in the meta campaign to the question of whether that's the right thing or not.
Do your players, maybe I'm just more talking about the adult players at this point, do they get a sense of the vastness of your world building here, or are they only just really concerned about what's happening at the table?
Both do, actually, because like when I was talking earlier about the First Mother, in order to get there, you have to go to an island at the edge of the world and catch a train that then moves across the brass discs, and there's a stop on her right butt cheek called Dragon Flank Station. And that's you can fly there too, but that's really expensive, so most people don't do that.
Most people are smart. They're thrifty.
Right?
Yeah, they don't want to spend a lot.
Or, if you really need to get there, chances are you can probably just teleport there. Which is what I usually have them do, because it's too much work to actually get them there.
Yeah, it's fun.
That's like an adventure unto itself.
The kids see it, and actually they get really uppity, is the word I'll use. I show them glimmers constantly, because it's all connected and it's all built in. And the teachers at the Apotheosis Institute at Dungeon School are all the biggest players in the good guy, air quotes, side of the fight.
Are they player characters in your other campaigns, or are they just powerful NPCs?
The educators are just sort of cornerstone NPCs.
Okay.
Like I've got my classic old wizard, old man Jasper, who leads the magic classes at Dungeon School and has no eyes, mostly because he's been forced to give them up, because when he has all of them, his power exceeds what the universe can contain. And until such, I've only once tricked them into getting them two. And when he had two eyes, I switched out my little wizard figurine for my Orcus figurine. And that's the two. And they've seen him with five.
With five eyes?
Yeah, he was the size of a small moon and using tentacles to throw asteroids at something out on the edge of the cosmos. So those are the teachers. They're bad. Bad monsters.
That was a great voice, though. That was really good.
Well, it's almost as good as your Ernie and Bert.
My pants.
It's actually very similar.
Kind of.
In Timber, yeah.
I love that. All right, so so you said that you have now your quote unquote adult campaign, which I still think is very enticing. They are subscribers. Are they paying?
Yes.
How does that work?
Tito's like, cha-ching.
Yeah.
Well, they've been given away for free.
Basically, it's for direct quotes, you can request one at bespokelegends.com.
Uh-huh.
But it's a flat fee per session for a standard 3 hours, and then a little bit more if you want me to go a lot longer than that.
Yeah. Now, do you run it for like a group? Or do you have like an ongoing group weekly group that
so
always does it?
This group, there are 8 players, and if 4 of them can show up, we do it.
Okay.
In the summer, I think that's amounted to 2 sessions so far.
That's good.
Still pretty good.
Yeah. For adults especially, because everybody's got kids and everybody's got stuff. But that's the long and short of it. Each of them has their character has a unique subplot that ties into the primary plot. Each of them has a plot arc. We just got finished with the liberation of Ildendor from the Azure Ruin, a unspeakably massive blue dragon that had taken over a Dwaro is the term I use for dwarf. Dwarf's not a nice word in this world.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's because humans use it to mean something different.
Right.
And that, you know, they have their own language. Yeah, anyway.
Makes sense.
Without getting into the language politics of fictitious species.
You're already there, man.
Right?
Yeah, living in it. It's very hard for you to answer a question because you start going on to like, well, this is this detail, this is that detail, which is great for a DM.
But with the adult, when I say adult, it basically means a few things. I'm in the process of moving them through a heavily modded version of Curse of Strahd.
Mm-hmm.
And the horror scenes that I've added to the castle, I'm really looking forward to. We're going to find out whether some of them want to show up for a little while.
Because I'm timing up for Halloween.
It should come out right on time, and if I can make it happen. And the scene where they meet my Strahd on a log is...
Strahd on a log.
It's I'm super excited for it, because it is uniquely gross and horrific. And there's body horror, and there's emotional stuff, and...
As he cracks his knuckles.
Yeah,
there's a very villainous...
There's a good chance that about half of them are going to attack, and...
You're like, yes.
Yeah, there's a TPK in that moment, right there. Like, if they...
I really hope your players are not listening to this podcast.
Seriously.
They will. And the thing is that they
they're still going
to
attack.
They're used to how much information I just puke at them all the time. And so some of them are just like, well, something happened. Because I have a few tanks. So they're just like, as long as I just get to beat something to death today, it's fine. And
so, okay. Well spent.
Yeah, I've got the tanks, and then I've got... what I call the magophiles, who I am, one of the skills I spent a lot of time working on is magobabble, like the feather thing I made up a little while ago.
Yeah.
And I can go on like that for a while, and some of them love that, and some of them would really rather I stop sometimes.
It's kind of like the tachyon particles from the emitter beam.
If I get there, if I say the word quantum out loud during it, then I'm out. I have to stop.
that's your safe word, or you're like,
yeah.
You're
like if I've gone there, you know, I've run out of something to actually say, and I'm just like, this sounds weird.
Yeah, it's science-y.
Yeah, I like to make magic sound like a science. That has no real explanation.
Yeah.
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 Like Lost. Everything seems to make sense.
Right.
But it really doesn't.
Makes no sense whatsoever. Right. There's a black and a white, and that's all you need to know. Yeah. All right. So going back to not so much delving into the storyline, but I think the business model is kind of interesting for people because I remember, I don't know, maybe this
And was, don't be sorry, by the way.
Yeah,
this
don't
is
be sorry.
Fascinating stuff.
So we're going to have, it's our job to rein you in as the DMs of this conversation. There was a thread on EN World, I remember, 10, 15 years ago about someone purporting to start a business using mass and theatricality, and they were really excited about selling DMing as an experience. And I remember it was a very different time, but they were being like, that's crazy. Why would anyone pay like your friends to DM for you or strangers to DM for you is even crazier. Right, and I think the advent of Acquisitions Incorporated and Critical Role and all these people who are now watching it happen and seeing it done on a performance level has kind of really shifted that perspective a lot. And you're kind of like a living testament to that. Is this something that you would have thought could have happened 15 years ago? Did you dream of this and knew one day it would happen, or what?
It was on that. It was on that bucket list. I.
When did you make that bucket list?
Those three items are from when I was 13.
Oh, okay. God.
So
yeah. And it took a long time, and I still don't have that last one. But eventually,
that other planet is going to be
It's going to get. We're going back to the moon now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're going to blow up the moon.
Infeasible.
That guy, that Matt Damon dude, was on Mars, so you're halfway there. Yeah. So sure, yeah, what do you think shifted in gaming? Is it more popular now, or is it just because the idea of it being a performance?
They want to
less time. Yeah, what is it?
So I'll say that I do think that the advent of Twitch streaming and podcasting has made it a lot more accessible to more people who would have been in my position where you're desperate for a group. And you want to have that kind of exciting and also the chaos of it, which is what I love the most. Is just I love taking everybody's insane silliness and weaving it together to create an ongoing moment. In the last game session of my adult campaign, they jumped a boat off a waterfall and landed it on a bridge while the bard was jamming rock jams on his guitar, which now shoots fire.
A la Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah, admittedly, well, yeah, it pretty much is directly from there. but I think if there's ever been a more compelling argument in favor of bards, that movie is it, because that character is just.
He's like the war bard, like the right? like the skald, the like penultimate. Everybody gets pumped up. Yeah, if I was a bard, that's what I would do.
But I distracted myself. I got.
Yeah, you get into the story details, and we're all like, tell us more. But like, yeah,
brain you got to hire him. You're giving it away.
The problem. Okay, so actually, to answer your actual question. So in terms of what I do, it's that everyone dreams of the perfect campaign. It's what they see in their head. Mm-hmm. And if you come to me and tell me what you see in your head, I will put it on your table. You don't have to do anything other than show up, roll dice, have a beer, and just sit back with your friends and have an amazing time. All of the setting pieces, all of the miniatures, all of the
you're like
acting,
one
that
stop
all
shop in here. You bring everything.
Yeah, I'm trying. I feel like my collection could really grow, but I don't know that there's anyone out there who really doesn't feel like their collection could grow.
Chris Perkins.
His could get bigger. I mean, let's be honest.
I'm sure there's something out there. Something's going to come out that he'll want, even if he doesn't have it now.
It's true.
And he'll get to decide what that something is.
But yeah, okay. So you're a dream maker.
Yeah.
Is that, that's
absolutely
what you're selling?
Yeah. The
It's like fantasy baseball camps and
exactly.
That
well,
kind
I'm
of
actually
thing,
summer
like,
camps.
This is a fantasy.
Summer
fantasy
camps
camp.
Are going to be coming up. I'm currently living in a rental, and when we move to a permanent place, which is what we're in the market to do right now, why we ended up in the rental, I'm going to have a studio, and at that point, I'll have the studio, hopefully with direct access to the backyard, and we'll do. I'm going to be doing summer camps where we'll do story workshopping, followed by two or three hours of a crawl.
God.
Then we'll go outside and do some practice foam fighting.
Yep.
And work on miniature painting if kids want to do that. Like anything that they want to do, but mainly write and play.
Okay, so I would like to reserve a spot in that camp for like 3 or 4 years.
For you, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Why not?
By then I'll actually have I'll be able to get that going. It's getting up over the hill. In 2 years, my youngest is in school full time, and I'm hoping to have built the business to at that point be able to actually move as quickly and as agilely as I'd like to.
So the after school program. Now, how did you get into schools and to do those?
So I was in a board gaming group. Here is the first thing, closest thing I could get to any kind of role-playing game for a long time. We played the Game of Thrones game at least once a month for a long time, and I would occasionally make comments like, this isn't that much more complicated than D&D, and just sort of sleek it in there bit by bit until one day I got them to try, and I had them take online quizzes or just tell me what they wanted, and I built some characters, and we started going, and then more and more people have gotten picked up along the way. I had a policy for a long time. If I found a group orphan out there who is looking to get back, I've got people who haven't played since the spines of the books were orange. You know what I'm saying? Like, and they're back in now, and they're loving it because Our main caster wrote magic user on her character sheet. And every session I tell her, like, you have to switch it to wizard or sorcerer because I keep forgetting which it is.
Right.
And every time I look at your sheet, like, none of the anyway.
It all says magic user.
Right. That's all I matter. And it's yeah.
And there's a fighting man as well.
That would be great.
So yeah, how did you get into schools? How did you get
that board gaming group I tricked into being a D&D group, and that was the point where there was a mother in the group of the kid at the school who told me, like, this is the performance art, you really need to go and do this with the kids, they'd love it. And then there was a spot at Seattle Jewish Community School where my younger kids were at the time, and this was actually also on the side I had been trying to run for my kids because they really wanted to know what I was doing because I was really excited about it the time.
about how long ago was this?
With my kids, it was 3 years ago. It's barely been 2 years since I've been in the school. My first year, I only had one class. The second year, I briefly had one, but then the kids who had graduated had moved on to Billings Middle School, where my other classes are now, and they kept coming back for the classes, but mm-hmm. sixth graders and third graders cannot hear the same story, because the sixth graders require a level of discipline that destroys the third graders' sense of agency and their creativity, and the third graders need enough freedom of imagination that if I allowed the sixth graders to do that, they would just ruin everything, because it would be cool ideas, but it would be Godzilla on a steamroller smashing everything. It'd be cool, but it would be dysfunctional.
So you learned how to curtail it for each audience.
And I ended up having to remove the sixth graders, and I followed them to that school, and that brought me up to three classes, because enough kids there heard about it when it was one class that it had to become another one, and then parents from those classes got me involved in the idea of working with Asperger's kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to talk about that too.
And I will say that's something I'm still working towards. I do work with Asperger's kids in my classes specifically. I'm not certified as a psychologist to do so. My expertise is purely in performance and storytelling. Mm-hmm. But I do understand where they're coming from personally. And there's this idea called the sensory funnel. And I that's sort of the model I use for moving towards them. And the idea is a lot of people try to start at social skills. And under the social skills is the focus issues. And under the focus issues are awareness issues. And under the awareness issues are the sensory issues. And sensory issues are things like picky eaters, tactile sensory overload. And those lead to the awareness problems where a kid shuts down. And this is the area where I try to short circuit it, because if you go straight to social skills, then you'll end up fighting with them.
Yeah.
And nobody wins. The first thing I learned when I got into a middle school classroom was that the only way I could get them to come to me is if I went to them first.
Right.
And that's the root of this, is that basically I create something awesome happening in the room that stimulates their senses in multiple ways. I have intro music that I do and the voices, and if the schools will let me, I just got this really awesome incense burner that's a dragon shape, and the smoke comes out of its mouth. Ooh. That I want to use as a set piece as well. But like, so I can really get multi-sensory stuff going on, and it creates an environment where they become very aware of what's happening, and it helps them focus. And at that point, when they're totally focused in on the game and aware of what's happening in the game, at that point, I model social challenges. I don't directly confront them with it. There's almost always a nonviolent solution to every single scene that I write.
Yeah.
My personal favorite was a kid who got the guardian spirit of a fountain to just leave by singing a song. He came in with a song he wrote in the interim between two classes. And I was like, all right, he just lets you have the fountain. I had two sessions of a fight here, but
we want you to sing. You gotta
go. And did he sing it?
Oh yeah, he sang the song out loud, made a performance check. I gave him plus 15 because he stood there and sang the song.
Yeah.
And he rolled like a 36.
Jeez.
And
you're like, yep, spirit is assuaged.
Yeah. And so I ended up having to buff up the other end of that campaign a little bit, but you know, that's where the improv part comes in. I can mess around with it.
Yeah.
It's
really fascinating.
And then they start jostling me. Well, now everybody wants to sing a song. He did an original artistic thing. He did a character thing.
Right.
You know, like that's...
Your fighter's not going to...
Yeah. And well, you know, if the fighter did, you know, that was the sorcerer.
Oh.
Yeah. It wasn't even a bard. I've only had one bar, and actually that kid has never sung. We talk about music a lot, but
right. Well, yeah. Not our bar. All bards are good singers. Yeah. You know, sometimes they're just percussionists or storytellers. I like the idea of a bard as an actor too. Like that they're just, you know.
I have this
performers just like everybody else.
I have this quixotic dream of managing to create a culinary bard,
but like an Iron Chef kind of.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but that kind of magic is so combat useless.
Oh yeah.
I don't even know what you would do. You just have pre-prepared vials of scents, and it'd be like that scene in Ratatouille where he eats the bite and he shoots back and he's like having this moment. So you just throw your potion at the orcs, and all of a sudden they remember their mothers.
Those cantrips that are like the bard's like you know, vicious rebuke or whatever, and you're
just
like,
twist them around a little bit.
Eat this.
Oh man.
Eat this, bad orc who's trying to attack me. Oh, I remember my childhood.
Right, he's just like
orc on his knees weeping. You're like, psychic damage. I caused all of the psychic damage. This is all super fascinating. I feel like we could talk to you for a whole another hour. And get even more information about your amazing game world.
Well, it's going to keep growing.
Where can people go check out?
And well, hire you.
And hire you in the Seattle area.
BespokeLegends.com is my freshly minted website
where
I'm going to be blogging about this. I'm on Facebook. Dungeon School is what I was using before. But then as I started doing things that weren't for kids, I had to have a more general term. So it's Bespoke Legends and BespokeLegends.com. But Dungeon School on Facebook or Bespoke Legends on Facebook.
Cool.
They're both there. And you can see all my old campaigns. There's pictures from all of them and descriptions of the plots and all the crazy scenes with miniatures. Yeah.
Very cool. Are you willing to travel? If someone's like, hey, I have this birthday party.
Can you Skype as a... Well, you can't bring all your props, I guess.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot because for me, a big part of what makes me successful as a DM is the ability to read the room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if I can read everybody in the room and get a sense of what they need from me at a given moment, then I can sort of shift the dynamic of the energy in the space. And I've never done that through Skype. I've never tried it to see if I could read people. I have a group that I would love to play with that way, but they're all over the world in different time zones. It'd be challenging.
That would be hard
to. It is always a challenge. Well, yeah. Cool. Well, thanks a lot, Ben. It was really great talking to you. I can already tell you're an amazing DM just by having this conversation. Mm. So
you're doing great work.
Yeah.
Thank you. Oh, thank you very much. It'd be my pleasure to continue amazing anyone who's interested in being amazed.
Nice. You're like, I'm ready to sign up for amazing.
Bespoke Legends is where people can go to find out about hiring you as well.
Absolutely.
Okay. For kids and adults.
Yes.
Okay.
And middle-aged people as well as elderly.
Sure.
And dogs.
Yeah,
dogs would be great.
If you want to play, call me up. We'll be legendary.
All right.
Oh, that's a good tagline.
Be legendary.
That's really good. Is that on the website?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
That's the tagline.
Tito's going to call you right after this podcast.
You're like, I don't care what the flat fee is.
Make me legendary.
Wait, can I trade D&D swag for this?
You know?
Yeah.
I have a player who does.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, he's going to give me a tour right after this.
Sweet. All right. Well, again, thank you so much. And happy gaming going forward.
Thanks, Ben.
Sweet. You're welcome. Thank you.
Oh my God. So Ben Cameron is like my new Dungeon Master hero.
I could kind of tell.
I think
you were developing a little.
Because I want to know all about his world
and
his crazy world ideas with the brass plates and the mother dragon.
He was real good.
Yeah, and it's all locked in his brain pan, which is amazing.
And he has five kids.
And he's got five kids. We didn't even get into that. But
I know.
Like, how did you find the time for those kids? It's amazing.
Never mind.
No, you weren't going to mention that. All right, so definitely go check out BespokeLegends.com.
Yes.
This is an amazing story, and hopefully, I don't know, he was a really good guest. Maybe we'll get back, and maybe he'll like run something for us or something.
I think there's more there.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
You can follow me, I'm at Greg Tito. You can ask me any questions you want about stuff, the Dungeon Mastering. I feel like I'm a novice now compared to this dude.
That was amazing.
What about you, Shelly? Where can they find you?
Find me on Twitter at Shelly Moo.
That's
or
awesome.
Avalon Hill.
Nice.
Avalon Hill 2, the number 2.
The number 2,
yeah.
Not T-O-O or T-W-O.
No.
Nice. Yeah. And, of course, Wizards official Dungeons & Dragons Twitter is Wizards_DND. The N, not the ampersand.
Right.
Ampersand breaks.
We're so complicated.
Twitter. I know, it's so annoying. But, of course, you can always find out more about Dungeons & Dragons at DungeonsandDragons.com. If you like us, give us a good rating on iTunes. It helps. It makes people like us more and find us. So go ahead and do that. And if you have any negative comments, make sure you all message them to Shelly.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you, guys. We'll see you next week.
Thanks.
Bye.